You can tell her. You can tell her anything. She's a real good listener. You can tell her anything.
Yo, what's up? It's your girl, Father Longlegs. You know me, Daddy T. Wow, this is the solo episode you've all been waiting for. Just kidding. I don't think anyone's been waiting for it. But I've done this for the last 2 years since this podcast has been born on my birthday. And so I thought I'd continue the tradition and do a solo episode. So here I go. But before we get into it, you know, I just want to make a quick announcement. It was my birthday yesterday. I guess by the time this comes out, it will have been a few days. But I posted this online, but if you are listening to this and didn't see this and want to kind of join me in celebrating this year, to be honest, 2020 has been a year where I don't really feel like celebrating myself, but I also get overly anxious and sad if I just am by myself on my birthday. So this year, I've asked my friends and family to send me a love letter. And I don't mean a love letter to me. I mean a love letter from you to you and written to yourself. Like, you know, dear Teresa, hi, I love you. Like that, but with more details. And I think it'll be very nice to be able to see sort of what makes you guys love yourselves. It's inspirational for me, someone who's trying to learn to love myself, but also just I think the act of writing it down will bring much joy to you, which will bring much joy to me, knowing that you spent some time thinking about how great you are, because you're great. You are great. And I hope that for everyone out there listening who isn't sure, you know, of themselves yet, to be able to look at themselves through the third person and be able to appreciate how great they are, because you are. So if you want to do that, you can send it to me. You can send it to me in the email, but I am a sucker for a handwritten letter. Oh my goodness. So I'm going to give you my P.O. Box. Please don't make me regret this. P.O. Box 11041, Glendale, California, 91226. So send me a letter. I can't wait to read it. I know some people already sent them, and I love it. So this is going to make me happy. That's my only announcement, so let's get into it. Okay, so I guess I'm going to start with a good confession, because I do this every time. My good confession before I get to the meat of this episode is that it's really simple. I had a really great birthday, very simple, nothing like anything I've ever done past years when I was growing up, especially in my 20s. I always wanted to throw big parties. I always thought in order to, you know, celebrate and feel good, I had to just kind of really be as big as possible. But while that was also fun, this year I did something I never thought I would have wanted to do. If you asked me last year, woke up at right before sunrise, had just like a few close friends meet me at the bottom of a hike, and we hiked up to a tree and watched the sun come up and all shared things we like about ourselves. Wow, sometimes I truly think I am becoming a cult leader, but I'm not, because you should do what you want. I have no interest in people following me into their doom. I simply love to be surrounded by friends who inspire me. So I guess if that's culty, then that's culty. I don't know what to say to that, but it was very nice. So that's my good confession. I have no complaints and no notes for whoever's writing the story of my life. Thank you for a nice day. I hope that 2020 ends happily. Oh boy, we got a lot of work to do, but I really hope, it's a crazy week. I really hope next week does not end in flames. But you know what? I'm ready for whatever happens, because I'm ready to be present. All right. Speaking of being present, here we go. Teresa, is there anything you'd like to tell me? Why, yes. There is something I'd like to tell you and tell me. Here is my confession. I don't think I've talked about this on the show before, but I love choices, but I hate choosing. Okay. You're like, is that just a funny play on words? Like, what does that mean? No, I have details. I'm going to go into it. But I'll give you a very quick example. For example, I take forever in the Taco Bell drive-thru, okay? It's a point of contention. Actually, been teased about it when I'm in the car with people. I'm never ready to order, and it's not because I don't know what I want. It's because I want to make sure I made the right choice. So I often will look at everything and, you know, really think through it and think through different combos, permutations, analyze best value, price, things like that. Some might say, oh, it's easier then, right, if you just decide what you want and just stick to it. Well, maybe, but it's not that I don't know what I want. I have very definitive answers if you ask me, what about this, what about this? I can tell you yes, no, but I need a yes, no everything. So on the other hand, I wouldn't enjoy a prefix menu because I like to choose. Does this make sense? I don't like the act of choosing, but I like that there are choices. I like that the choice wasn't made for me, but the responsibility of choice to me personally means that I want to make the best one. So at the end of the day, I could break it down this way. It's because I want information. I fucking love information. I'm sure some of you are aware when I go down research rabbit holes. Truly, one time I realized how much I love information when I was younger was in high school when I did my high school junior class final project in U.S. history class on the eugenics movement, because the assignment was to talk about something we didn't cover in history books. And I had briefly like learned about it from our social studies teacher like a year before. And I live near Stanford Library, where there's a whole eugenics archive, a lot of sources that aren't on the internet. But, you know, I loved being able to go and research and email things to myself and read it and really get a pretty horrifying look about that. So if you guys don't know what the eugenics movement was, oh boy, well, I won't get into it now, but it definitely inspired Hitler. So let's just put it that way. You don't really want to be a movement that was inspirational for someone so awful. But yeah, even to the point of information this year, when I started researching, the extreme right and, you know, the Council on National Policy, which led me to record the Ann Nelson episode, I remember reading about Hillsdale and being like, oh my God, this is crazy, but also kind of getting horny looking at information, not because of the information itself, but because I was learning facts that I did not know. So that is the extreme version of someone who just fucking loves information. Point being, though, I like being able to make an informed decision. And some might say, well, isn't that capitalism? Possibly. And by the way, many might assume I'm a communist because I'm a comedian that's poor. But I'm not, okay? I wouldn't ever identify myself by my governmental policy either. So I'm not going to be like, I'm a capitalist. I believe in human rights and freedom, okay? And neither the version of capitalism that we have or the version of communism that China has really has 100% of freedom or human rights. So fuck that. But I will say capitalism loosely is the idea that we are given more and more choices, therefore more and more better options. But I believe the part that we don't have is access to information. So now we put so much money in these businesses' hands and marketing, you know, marketing geniuses to trick us and stuff, that we, the consumers, don't actually have access to all the best information. There's a moment in time when Amazon was great because of reviews, and now the reviews are, they're tainted. They've been compromised. They're full of review farms. So the reality is it's become harder to get information to know what choice to make, which to me feels similar to not having a choice, okay? Here's another example. Okay, if I gave you four houses to live in, right? That's great. I don't even have one house to own. But I was like, you can choose any of these four houses. They're all different. I'm not going to tell you which one's better, but they're all different from the outside. And you can have it. Isn't that great? Those are choices. But one of them doesn't have running water. The other has bed bugs. And another's haunted. So, all right, make your choice. You get choices. That would be great if you could easily know by looking at it outside which one was which. But you got to collect some information, right? You got to figure it out. You got to go in. You got to take a look around. You got to, you know, make sure you got to check out the neighborhood. You got to sleep there a few nights to make sure it's not the haunted one. That's a very small microcosm of what I mean, but every choice we have now, like, we are paralyzed because you don't want to make the wrong one. I think in my head, I always feel like I need to make all the choices first and then come back and make the right one. And that is why I often make mistakes, because sometimes I'm like, I need to eliminate all the wrong choices so that I know I'm not leaving behind a better choice. Now, you might say that sounds greedy, and you might be right. You are right. There's a reason I'm talking about this now. I think I'm coming to a crossroads where I'm realizing, like, you don't have to try everything. You just have to constantly be true to yourself and what your needs and wants are at the moment. So if something isn't fulfilling them, you probably didn't make the right choice. And that is called settling, right? And I'm not saying you need to have 100% all the time or hold yourself to impossible standards. But you just got to know how to create the world that you want to live in by connecting to others who also want that, okay? You can't silo yourself away from society and still expect to be a part of it. You and me, all of us, are part of the world we create and get to live in. That's the cool thing. Yeah, it sucks when it's not your world, but over time, if we're all doing these things, we'll find this balance, I think. Okay, I don't know. That's me on my kumbaya, hoping things work out. There is that video of me doing mushrooms on the internet, which now has somehow 8 million views. But one thing I remember from that trip, because believe it or not, even though I seem very high in that, it is still me. And I remember my thoughts. I remember being in the door scene of The Nightmare Before Christmas, and you can go through all these doors, right? And I've talked about that in the video, but I also believe I, as a kid, loved that scene because the idea of all the doors to me were the choices. And I loved that, you know, Tim Burton made the choice for us to watch the story of the Halloween door. But it was just cool. Instead of just starting it in Halloween Town, right, he created this little glimpse into what else there is. So it gives me this beautiful moment of, like, I love that there are choices, that we're not just watching the story and going, why? But we're watching this story, and I know it was someone's choice to make this story about Halloween, right? Because in a world that has all of these different doors, why did he choose that one? Well, he gave us a story, and it's a great story, so that's why. So I think, to me, it goes back to this idea of storytelling. Like, I love writing, but what's so hard about writing is eliminating the choices. As you tell the story, you are making choices to tell this one and not another one. And as the writer, you kind of have what feels like the option to tell any story. But just like, I think this Michelangelo said that when he carves a block of stone, he's actually letting the figure out. I think stories are the same way. It's not that there's a wrong or right choice, but there is a strong choice, and there's a choice that feels right for that cohesive story. And so as you tell it, you might not know where it's going, but if you are being true to the character and the motivations and sort of the theme that you want to embody, there is one version that is the choice you make, and that will be the good version for you because you will feel good about it. Obviously, it's a work in progress for me to get there. I'm constantly paralyzed by choice. But the reality is, if you don't make any, you basically have no choices, right? If you make no choice, you're doing nothing. So I guess this kind of folds back to the idea of voting, even though I really didn't mean for it to. But it is election week. And I think what scares a lot of people about choosing is that they then live in a world where they chose a thing that they might not feel they have all the information about, and then you feel responsible. So there's some sort of comfort in abstaining from the choice, even though it's not real. It's a myth or an illusion that when you abstain, you're not making a choice. But you are. You're choosing to live in this world that you helped create by not making a choice. Does that make sense? So for people who don't vote, you know, if enough people don't vote and they're all Democrats, you can infer that the Democrats will lose some votes. If enough people don't vote and the Republicans, same thing. So the idea is, like, by doing anything, you are making a choice, but it feels a little more comforting for some to not have to actively say, I pick A or I pick B. So I hope this isn't getting too heady, but this really, like, to me, is something I've been thinking about a lot, because I think when I was younger, I would date a lot of, I obviously liked everyone I dated, but I think there was this feeling that was like repeating a pattern that I couldn't understand until I got older. So I constantly found myself thinking like, why is this always happening to me, right? Like, why am I always in this situation? How did I end up here? I really didn't understand that I got there because of a lot of choices I made. Sure, other people involved as well, and they made choices, right? The point is not to victim blame or say one person is responsible for everything. But the only thing I have control over in my life is my own choice. And they have to interact with other choices too. But by completely saying I was not responsible, I took away all power I had. I'm not saying I have all the power, but I took away all power that I did have, right? You can't really boost up your power or level up if you never give yourself a chance to use it. So when I used to be single out in the New York dating pool, ugh, what a nightmare. I mean, I gotta say, like, there were some fun nights where really it's an energy. You go out in your 20s and everyone's just like, it's fun, but it's not really conducive to these long-term healthy relationships, at least not the world that I saw, you know, and probably for a reason. I probably was looking in the wrong places. But how I used to feel was like, every time I used dating apps, I would feel like everything was the same. Like, oh, look at all these people. I don't want to make a choice. Nobody stands out to me. I was like waiting for someone to catch my eye. I didn't want to do the work of trying to figure out what I wanted and actually make an informed choice. I often would match with someone and just be like, I don't care how this goes, right? Like, I'll go on a date. I usually wouldn't really want to or look forward to it, but I'd be like, why not? I hope he changes my mind. Well, that's a terrible place to start. You go on a date waiting for someone to change your mind about not wanting to date them. I mean, I feel sorry for the people I went on dates with. I apologize. But to be fair, I didn't know myself well enough, so I wasn't giving myself, you know, the opportunities either. But now it's a little different, right? Like, I met my boyfriend on a dating app. I would never have considered that possible because I gave dating apps a pretty solid college try, and I just never ever could connect to anybody. And I think it's because I wasn't connecting to myself before I started using it. But this time around, I remember going through a breakup last year, and then in the fall I started getting on dating apps. You know, tentatively I was like, I think I'm ready to try. But to me, these were choices. I was not talked into it. I made an active choice that I wanted to try dating because I wanted to try learning healthy and responsible relationship patterns. And the only way to like take the tools you've learned in therapy out into the real world is to go into the real world. There's no like practice. There's no scrimmage for relationships. Like, you enter a relationship, if you fuck up, that is someone you're hurting. But that doesn't mean you should stay away. It just means to really make sure you're prepared and equipped. You got to just continue working on yourself. So I remember entering the dating pool, and it's almost like all these 30 years that I spent fucking it up kind of all came together. And I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, I eliminated a lot of wrong choices. So it became way easier. I don't know how to describe it. It was like night and day. Like, it's like a 180 degree change from having absolutely no idea what I was doing, really being frustrated, to knowing how to describe myself in words that felt like me, you know, really try to represent what I liked about myself, hoping that someone else would like those same things. Versus when I was younger, it was like, how do I appear to be a hot girl so that I'll get swiped right on? Even though reality, that's not how I present to my world. And that's also not what I like about myself, you know? Like, what I like about myself is just being really stupid and silly and being able to have fun. So that's kind of what I ended up going with, just like, what would I like to swipe on? And I have to say, like, I had a really good experience entering the dating pool again. You know, first I dated a guy that I actually already had a crush on from knowing him through comedy. And we actually went on our first date on my birthday last year. And that, you know, didn't move forward. After like a month, he ended things very politely because it was like, you know, one of those like, okay, this isn't going to be the thing. I like you. I like you. Cool. And it really was great. I will have to say It was a great game. That's how I'll call it. It was a great game. So in my head, like, I thought winning meant, this is a bad analogy, but I'm going to keep going with it. Making it to the championships, right? Meant like going long-term. I'm in it. I'm the girlfriend. But the reality is, like, I want to be a good player. I want to be able to be good and healthy in relationships and be a supportive partner, which means even with someone who learns after a few dates that, like, they might like me, but I'm not the one for them, that I need to, as a solid partner and, you know, whatever, teammate, respect that, which I did. But I also have to, as a solid teammate for myself, be okay with being sad about it, which I was. It took me a few weeks. I was a little sad, a little hurt, but I acknowledged it. I didn't try to hide it. I was like, I'm a little hurt. You know, I was rejected, but that's because that's what happens, right? When you lose the game and then you're ready to go. And then I processed it and I moved on. And these were all choice. Like, I think I dated like two. I went on dates with two people from Raya and two people from Hinge. And it was like two for two. Like, truly, like, some of them didn't end up being like, you know, dating for a long time, but everybody I actually spent time with, talking to and trying to meet up with, by that time I was making a choice that, like, yes, you're the person I want to see tonight. Not, I think I want to go on a date tonight, I'll just say yes to whatever. Like, there's a difference, you know. Like, I've honed in on understanding, like, I'm choosing to hang out with you with my time, therefore I know that my time is valuable, therefore I'll know if someone doesn't treat me with the same respect I'm treating myself. And it becomes much easier to find people who respect you when you respect yourself. And yeah, so I want to speak to some of the, like, not downsides, but the hard parts of making these choices. So I'd love to say that dating was just easy breezy, but it's just as tough, right? It's one of those things that's still just as tough. But now that I'm resetting my patterns and learning how to make these, like, healthier choices, it doesn't make it easier, but it makes it more rewarding. Like, there's positive reinforcement along the way where I find, oh, this door takes me to a new place and I like it so far, so I'll keep going. But I'm ready to turn back if it sucks. I'm not trying to convince myself there's only one answer. I might be on the wrong path, but I know for sure it's a different one than the one I repeated like 20 times in my youth. So I'm going to keep trying it. And so this is a hard thing I had to do. In February, I had to end things with a girl I really liked. But it was a choice, and she was someone I had met in the fall on a dating app, and I liked her a lot, and we kind of connected and went on a few dates, and I think emotionally I was ready to start dating again and learning that people are not all, you know, toxic narcissists, but I don't think I was ready for a full relationship. And she was someone who I liked enough that if I wanted to keep dating, I would want to be in a relationship, like, because it happened over a few months, and enough where I was like, I don't really do casual. I don't want to not make a choice by just letting this go on as it is. Like, this would be the time when I would, if I was someone on the other end, like, waiting, I guess, for an answer, I would want the person I'm with to either let me know that they're interested in a relationship, or that they don't see that and that they've given it a thought and we should part ways, because my goal in the long run is to be in a relationship. And so that's only fair. So I had to end things with her, and it was hard because, and I don't know if I handled it that well. Like, I wish I could have said all that to her, but I think what I thought what was the nicest way to let her down was to just to say, I don't see this going into a relationship, and that's what I'm looking for, and I don't do casual, which is all true. But I think explaining a little bit more about, like, oh, these patterns and what I have. The reality is, at the time, I really just felt like nobody wants to hear that. Nobody likes to get rejected. But they like honesty. So just be honest and let it go. But everybody's different. She's not me, right? Like, I'm someone who might not want to hear that someone's just, that I'm not the one, right? Like, I wasn't chosen, but that doesn't mean I'm not great. I don't want to hear that. But I think for her, she really wanted to hear that, because then, like, a month later, she, like, messaged me and kind of, there was unfinished business. Like, there was stuff she hadn't said that she was upset about how it ended, and feeling that I had sort of, like, not been forthcoming. So that, to me, though, it was a learning opportunity, but also, like, a kind of a really, how can I say this? It was a really, like, serene moment for me, because in that moment, I realized, like, By trying to date people, I'm making myself vulnerable, and also I also am asking other people to be vulnerable. So I'm realizing that there is a real possibility of hurting someone. But if I'm acting truthfully and being honest, like, just like that guy who ended things with me, he's acting, it can still hurt me. But as a girl who's now able to handle my feelings, I, you know, was sad for 3 weeks and processed it and it was okay. So I have to understand, like, as much as people can hurt me, I also can't control if they're upset, and they're allowed to be. I need to give them space to be. And everyone's in a different part of their journey. Like, I do think there was a moment when she tried to put that feeling on me as if it was my responsibility. And I can only take ownership for my choice, which is I am ending things. So if that does make her sad, that is my choice. And yes, I get, I have responsibility there. But as far as, you know, owing any more explanation than what's comfortable for me, like, I don't need to go into my personal therapy. I don't need to go into the relationship I got out of that sort of set me up for not being ready to enter another. I don't need to go into that because that's my choice, how much I want to share, right? So I think this is what I'm learning now, is like the nuance of being honest is it's not, the truth is not always true and untrue. There is a full picture you can paint. And the way to get more information to make the right choice, I think, is just to keep asking questions. And then also respecting when someone else does not want you in their, like, boundary. Like, everybody has these boundaries, and you need to understand that it's not anybody's, it's not your given right to get the answers, but you should always be allowed to ask a question. I hope you guys are following along. Okay. Cause this is so interesting to me. So I'm going to use another example. So that was me learning that making a choice, could be very beneficial, because the moment it was very uncomfortable to have her be upset at me, cause nobody likes to be, just nobody wants to have people mad at them. But the reason I say it was serene was because I didn't feel like, it sounds weird to say this, cause it wasn't like that I was heartless. Like, I felt empathetic for her. I know that feeling. I felt sad that she was sad, but I did not feel guilty or responsible or like I needed to fix it. I understood, like, this is what happens and it's sad, but unless I want to be with her, which I liked her a lot, but I, you know, I was not ready for a relationship. That was true. So I there's nothing we can do. She was sad about the truth, which is the truth. So I didn't feel in that moment like shame or anything. It was very serene. It was a way of, I connected, I understood her, I felt upset, I addressed her feelings, but I did not take ownership of them, because I think so much of learning how to make these choices is that you also have to be okay with what's on the other end of your choice, which are, I guess you can call them consequences, but they're also just life, right? You input output, so you gotta be okay once you put something in there that whatever comes out, you chose that. And for that reason, I think a lot of younger people, including myself when I was younger, felt it was easier to eliminate choice, right? Then you can't be afraid of making the wrong one. And adults often do make choices for children. And I think they start to learn that it's comfortable when adults make choices for you. But they're only doing that because you're a child. I think the way to get over this is you have to slowly fall. Like, you don't learn to ride a bicycle without falling, but you get good at riding a bicycle if you've fallen a few times. But if you've never fallen, riding a bike as an adult is probably so scary. If you don't fall, the magnitude of a fall is going to just be overwhelming. And I think as children, if you've never given a choice and everything's made for you, as you get older, you can be very overwhelmed by a consequence, right? I mean, this kind of speaks a little bit to, like, privilege as well. I know I'm trying to make this personal and not have it all be about politics, but it does kind of tie in the fact that, like, a lot of times very, very sheltered, very privileged, well-off people, like, let's say, rich white old billionaires. Why are they so afraid? Because I think they have so many choices made for them that they start to feel very comfortable in this boxed life. And then going back to this idea of being against abortion or being against gay marriage, it's like they're trying to eliminate these choices because if you made this a possibility, then they might have to consider, well, am I making the right choice? Like, am I gay? Or, you know, is everything in the Bible true or whatever? I mean, although abortion is not to even go down that path, but it's very much been polarized from politics less than religion. But I do think it's not a coincidence that life is not the opposite of choice. In fact, choice is, I would say, a key definition of life. Yet why do they use those terms, pro-life, pro-choice, right? If you grow up all your life feeling like you're only here because someone made the choices for you, the idea of allowing people freedom to choose is very scary, because then you're like, well, what if people make the wrong choice and press the wrong button and boop, we're all gone. But these aren't random people. These are humans who can learn empathy and make informed choices. And that's what we're missing, is this idea that we should always be able to ask questions and you should not be afraid of not having the answer. Oh my goodness. Okay. A lot of religious schools make people wear uniforms. I, for one, am not against uniforms. Honestly, some uniforms are quite cute. Probably save your parents a lot of money trying to buy limited two shirts. But the uniforms are a way of kind of eliminating that choice. It takes your mind off of that and, you know, to a certain degree can actually be very good for focus for school, but also takes away expression, right? I think the idea of having a choice there in high school with clothes, like, right, you then have to decide, like, what clique are you going to fit in? What are you going to wear? Blah, blah, blah. But even with uniforms, we all know they're still going to be the cool girls. They're still going to be the jocks. Like, people are still going to make those choices. It still happens. And I just think it's an illusion to say we can take away people's choices and make their lives easier, because that is assuming everyone's starting from the same place. And that's just not true. The reason there are choices is because we know the right choice is not the right one for everyone. And I think in order for people to get past needing to regulate others' choices, they need to understand that, like, the right choice for you is not the right choice for someone else, right? The person who's the one for me is, I hope, not the one for anyone else, because I want them to be the one for me, or whatever. That's a bad example because I don't really believe in the one. But if you did, there you go. You can't be the one for everybody you've dated, because, well, that's going to really suck, because then you've got to really split up your time, right? Then you're like the eighth for everybody. Anyways, that sounds like a drug thing, but it's not meant to be. You're the joint for everyone, but be the bowl, be the bong. Okay, I'm almost done, I promise. Please, if you're listening to this and you relate to it, let me know. Or if you're like, totally disagree. Or if you've got insight or other information I haven't considered, I'd love to hear it. Like I said, information makes me wet. Okay, so I was talking about answers and I want to kind of wrap up on this. We shouldn't be afraid of not having the answer. It can be very scary to be asked a question you don't know the answer to, especially if you're in a test, but hopefully you've studied for the test. But in real life, it's even scarier because you're like, well, what if the answer doesn't exist, right? People don't always want to know why we're here, who the God is, because what if the answer does not exist? So that's why people think it's easier to just be told the answer. Some religions encourage question asking. A lot of, like, more, I guess, evangelical religions that are based on keeping the, you know, the community tight and sort of no insiders, no outsiders, that kind of thing. Only insiders, no outsiders. They don't really encourage question asking because sometimes it really does poke some holes in the theories. I will say it is really fun as someone who this year finally started asking more questions and getting more answers. It's really fun to actually get to that point with a partner where you don't have the answers and you look together. And that used to be really scary to me. I remember one of my old relationships that was kind of unhealthy and toxic. I was constantly like asking him, like, what do you want? Because he would act like he wanted to be with me, but then he would do something totally different. And then I would say very clearly, like, I want to be in a relationship with you and it's what I want. And I'll be sad if you don't, but I'm ready to make the choice of putting myself out there, and if you don't want it, I'm ready to feel hurt. But he couldn't let me go and make that choice. So he would always say, I don't know, I don't know. And then over 3 years, we really like went up and down. I realized like he did make the choice, right? By giving me 3 years of sort of, you know, this emotional abuse, like that is a choice, right? You can't then suddenly say, now I choose to be a kind boyfriend or, you know, propose and be a husband and then eliminate those 3 years. That's part of the relationship. So I do not, looking back on myself and how I was paralyzed by choice, I do not, how do I say this? Because I don't want to say it like it's victim blaming because it's all my fault. Like, I do think that everybody has responsibility for their actions and how much they hurt others. But let's just put it this way. I forgive him. I don't really hold any anger or resentment towards him because I kind of understand that feeling of not wanting to make the wrong choice. But now that I understand it, I don't think I would find myself in that situation again. He was kind of I think I was afraid of asking questions I didn't want to know the answers to either, right? Like, do you love me? Things like that. It's very scary. But then I started making choices. Like, I did tell him I love you when I felt it. And he didn't say it back. And it did hurt. But now I have learned that these are, you might call them red flags, right? Because I kept dating him after that. And if I was ever in that situation again, which I don't think I will be, I will know what to do. Because I made a choice and I stayed present for the output and I learned from it. So that's why I think choice is important. My relationship now, I have a boyfriend now, which I've talked about. I know you guys are like, you keep talking about your boyfriend. I just want you guys to know that somebody loves me. I am lovable. That's a joke. Well, it is true. I hope. I love myself, so I am lovable. In my relationship now, I often ask questions because I'm still trying to figure myself out. And he doesn't always know the answers to them. But it doesn't scare him, which is so inspiring to me. Like, I really am just like, I really admire his calm and stability, because when I ask something that he doesn't know the answer to, he's not afraid. And then what's really cool is then we realize, oh, we're partners who have the same questions. So we can look for the answers together. And that is what I'm talking about. That feeling, that euphoric moment is actually stronger than that toxic feeling I used to get euphoria from, which is when someone withholds from you and then gives a little bit. But there's an even better feeling. So for anyone who's been in these like toxic withholding situations, and you feel like, oh, but nothing's ever going to be as good. On the other side of that is finding someone who's so giving that you are able to give yourself and they give you their self. And then you just kind of search for the answers together. It's very cool. Like, I don't know. You're like, what kind of questions? For example, one time we were hanging out over the weekend and I just felt, Sunday night rolled around, it was time for him to go home, and I just started crying. I just felt so sad. I was so sad because frankly, I don't know, right? It was a question my body was asking, right? Like, I think what the question was, will I see you again? Even though we've been dating for months and there's nothing to lead me to believe I wouldn't see him again, I've been trained through these experiences of withholding that I might not ever see him again, because that's a feeling I've had where I feel like things were so sure and then the rug got pulled. So that was a question I don't have the answer to. And I started crying and I tried my best to explain it to him by saying, like, I think some of this is negative pattern from before, but clearly I'm picking up on something too. And I don't know, like, do you know all this stuff? Right. And he was like, I don't know. Like, I'm here and blah, blah, blah. Like, he was here for it. It didn't scare him, but he also wasn't afraid to be like, I don't know. Cause it's like in my head, I want to be like, you have to promise never to leave me. It's like, well, he can't. And if someone promises that, they're lying, cause nobody can. So I love that he's able to tell me things like, I don't know. Like, I don't know the answer, but in a real way, not I don't know cause I'm not choosing. Like, he can tell me what he knows now. Like, I want to be here with you now. If you ask me now, I do want to see you again. Could that change? Of course. But is he actually acting in the moment and being authentic? Yes. So that is the kind of thing to me where I'm like, we then look for the answer together. We both are trying to figure out together where we're going. And that's really cool. Like, that is something I never thought I would like to sit in, this uncertainty. But when you have a partner ready to ask the same questions as you, that is really beautiful. And so, and I'll give you an example. He asked me questions I don't know the answers to too. So it's not just me asking questions. It's not like mansplaining. Like, and when I say questions, I mean, he shares things with me, and I'm so used to men I've dated, like, just sharing things with me to teach me something. And then I'd be like, oh, that's good. But he'll tell me things that he's learning, like, oh, he's learning about the stock market or this, and he's reading about these financial reports. And he'll go off about it and like be like, this is so interesting, this and this and this. And I read about these numbers and what do you think about this? And then I'll go, so what does that mean? And he says, I don't know. And at first that would throw me off because I'd be like, why are you telling me? I don't understand what information you're trying to give me. But then, honestly, just now, really, as I'm saying this, I realized that what he is doing is sharing a question he has and some information he has, but it's not enough for the answer. And he's sharing with me because, well, I hope it's because he cares what I think, but also because we're partners, right? So to me, it's like, oh, I don't need to be bothered that I don't know how to respond to this because he doesn't either. I can respond how I would respond. And we can both sit in this moment where we're like, yeah, what does it mean? Well, here's what I think. Oh, here's what I think. And we can find something new together. So that's my confession. I love having choices, but I hate choosing. But I think I've broken it down a little bit. And now I'm starting to understand what I'm scared of is consequences, not choosing itself. So I think what I need to learn is to keep making choices in a way that makes it easier for me to make the right choice in the future. And I'll end with a fun note, okay? I always loved Halloween. Obviously, it's around my birthday. I'm queer. You know, I used to sew. Many reasons. Halloween is so, so, so fun. I always used to put so much time into deciding what to be, and it was a choice that was hard. And I usually just start working backwards by like, oh, I want to wear fishnets, or I want to wear green, or I want to wear glitter, and then backwards based on what costume I could incorporate that in. But this year, well, to be honest, because I barely do Halloween now and it's 2020 pandemic, there's no festivities. But I was like, I want to make a costume and take a picture because I love Halloween. So I was like, what should I be? What should I be? I have no idea. It could be anything. And then one day I just thought, you know that movie Rock-a-Doodle Doo? I love that chicken, that cute chicken that looks like Ariana Grande. So I was like, I think I want to be something from Rock-a-Doodle Doo. And then my first instinct was, oh, I want to be the hot chicken. But I was like, it's kind of cliche, just another sexy costume. But you know what's also great is Chanticleer, the Elvis Presley, the cock, the rooster. And I thought, how fun to just be a fucking cock, a rooster for Halloween. So again, many other choices I could be, but I just made a choice. I'm going to be a chicken this year. I'm going to be a rooster. I'm going to be a hot rooster. Elvis Presley rooster, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that's it. And I was like, that's it. I made the choice. And then I got excited about it. And I just started like designing the costume, and I'm going to make some feather tails and things like that. We'll see. I'll post a picture. But that's my little share that I, instead of mulling over 5 million costumes, I just made a choice and then got excited about making it the best choice. Because once I'm in it, I can just design it however I want. So that's the episode. I hope you guys enjoy. I hope you guys have a great week, and go vote.
Hi, I'm Erin.
And I'm Nicole.
And we're the hosts of the comedy podcast, Dude, That's Fucked Up.
Join us every Wednesday for an irreverent discussion on topics such as
light cannibalism, a la the Donner Party,
JFK's meth dependency,
cryptid fanfic,
and even pubes. It's available now on the Hoo Ha Ha Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go to dtfupodcast.com for more information.
You know what's not fucked up?
This podcast, you butthole.
This has been a Hoo Ha Ha podcast.